If you want to explore unique perspectives that are rarely expressed in mainstream media, you are listening to the right channel. This is CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC.
To Guerrilla Radio, recorded April 3rd, 2024. Well, over the weekend, Palestinians marked Land Day, the annual March 30th commemoration of six civilians murdered by Israeli soldiers while protesting expropriation of their homes and property in 1976. In Toronto, demonstrations were held Saturday in conjunction with those calling for a cessation to Israel's ongoing violence, already deemed tantamount to genocide by court findings at the International Court of Justice and ordered stopped in the UN Security Council. The protest in Toronto proceeded much as the many preceding it had, until Toronto Police Services decided to escalate. By the end, seven had been detained, three ultimately charged, and policing in Toronto the Good once again proved it ain't so much so. But should we be surprised that the cops in Toronto behave like the politicians in Ottawa and the presses everywhere in the country, unfairly serving and protecting the interests of Israel? After all, it's a Canadian tradition. As Canadian author Eve Engler says of his 2010 book, Canada and Israel Building Apartheid, liberal and conservative governments, usually with support from the NDP, have staunchly backed Israel since before its creation. Eve Engler is a Montreal-based political activist and the author of 13 books, mostly detailing the dark dealings of Canada's foreign policy elite, including the aforementioned. His latest, co-authored with Owen Schock, is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy, which Eve is currently touring across Canada. He's also a prolific essayist whose writing appears across the internet and at his website, eveengler.com, where I found his recent piece, Gaza, the Final Nail in Canada as Honest Broker Coffin. Eve Engler in the first half, and last week America's media Wurlitzer concerted in replaying a favorite from its propaganda songbook, The Havana Syndrome Hustle, for those not tuned to spook radio, was the one about the mysterious illness allegedly suffered by American diplomats in Cuba and sympathetically experienced by their Canadian colleagues. Safe to say the re-release was received with crickets from the critics, but any distraction is a welcome one for American intelligence these days. But it's not all clownery in Washington, D.C., where former counterterrorism czar under George W. Bush rose again last week to be named head of the NED. Covert Action magazine has, for those unfamiliar with the Beltway players, published a program entry on the National Endowment for Democracy's new number one, Juan Zarate. Jeremy Kuzmarov is a journalist and author who also serves as managing editor at CAM. Jeremy's book titles include Obama's Unending Wars and The Russians Are Coming Again, written with John Marciano. His latest, Warmonger, How Clinton's Malign Foreign Policy Launched the U.S. Trajectory from Bush 2 to Biden, is recently out. His recent article at CAM is CIA Cutout Appoints Counterterrorism Czar Who Supported Massive Human Rights Abuses. Jeremy Kuzmarov and Spook World Not-So-Golden Oldies reprised at Foggy Bottom in the second half. But first, Eve Engler on Toronto's protest policing, Foreign Minister Melanie Genocide Jolie's public meltdown, and Israel's escalation through bombing of the Iranian embassy in Damascus. Welcome back to the program, Eve.
Thanks for having me.
Always my pleasure, of course. Now, Eve, before getting to the Toronto Police Service's escalatory model of policing Palestinian demos, how has the same happening in your city been handled by the Montreal police?
There's been 27 weekends in a row of mass protests in Montreal on Palestine. And I would say that the police have done a pretty decent job. They over-police the demonstrations, but they haven't actually suppressed the demonstrations. You know, I hesitant to give the Montreal police any credit for much, but I would say they have done a decent job in not being not sort of following the push by the pro-Israel groups and right-wing commentators to clamp down.
So do we have proof that there has been a push officially by the people you mentioned to influence the way the demos are being policed, or is this all sort of casually done?
Oh, no, this is Montreal Gazette even reported on a meeting the head of the Montreal police had with representatives of the Jewish community. And of course, that's the pro-Israel elements of the Jewish community. They stated explicitly that one of the people was quoted saying, isn't there something you can do to clamp down on the demonstrations? And the police chief from the answer in the Gazette, I wasn't on the actual webinar, but on the Zoom call, but they said, the police chief just sort of said basically no, or sort of danced around the question. So no, there's no doubt there is explicit. They've also, the pro-Israel groups have gotten a court injunction to have no protest within 50 meters, I believe it is, of a number of institutions, Jewish community institutions that have held one event. They held three former IDF soldiers to boast about, you know, killing Palestinians. And another one was a synagogue that held a real estate fair to sell off West Bank, Palestinian land in the West Bank. And so there were protests at those two events, and the pro-Israel Jewish community organizations went to the court to get an injunction to say that you couldn't actually protest in front of these community organizations. So there's nothing hidden about the fact that they want more authoritarian response to the mass protests and those who, you know, oppose Canada's role in enabling the genocide in Gaza.
Yeah, and in Toronto, there was an attempt to have whole neighborhoods blocked down, calling them Jewish neighborhoods. And you know, these are mixed neighborhoods. Toronto is a long way away from I am a Torontonian originally, and Toronto is a long way from the village system that it once could have, you know, credibly called different areas. I mean, there is still Little Italy and stuff like this, but it's not homogenous in any sense. To call it what, a whole district of Toronto, the Jewish area, is ridiculous, as anybody who lives or knows Toronto could tell you. But that was an attempt made there. And yet the Toronto police now, they have definitely ramped up their policing. Do we have indications of any kind of paper trail that you're aware of in that instance, Eve?
I'm not aware of a paper trail per se, but it's pretty on the public record that there was this whole attempt. You referenced the no protest zone in what they describe as Jewish neighborhoods. But what the main site of that that they were able to get the police to do was a highway, the 401 overpass. I mean, like, I don't know if there's an epitome of a non-anything type of neighborhood than the 401 overpass. I think the overpass is in a relatively, you know, an area probably is like 30% Jewish or something like that. That's, you know, higher proportion of Toronto Jews live in than, you know, elsewhere in the city, but it's an overpass of the major highway. And they actually succeeded in having, you know, so vast majority just cars going, you know, wherever they're going on the highway. They succeeded in getting the police to arrest people for just holding signs, basically to flags and signs to the cars, you know, going by. And there's all kinds of instances of overpasses in the Toronto area being similar kind of protests happening on all kinds of different issues that the police haven't intervened in. So they succeeded. That's about 2 months ago, 3 months ago, was a big push on that. And they got that shut down. They got the police to shut that down and arrested a few people. And then what they did on Saturday, from all the reports I'm seeing, this was the standard weekend demonstration. It was large. It was thousands of people. It was a long way into the demonstration. Nothing had happened at the demonstration. And suddenly the police decided that somebody who was in the sound truck, this video of it, of this younger looking you know, Arab looking background woman who's on the back of the sound truck, and they just go and like physically grab her and pull her off the sound truck. And then that elicits, like, obviously, you know, the likely response of people being outraged. And then they bring in the horses, and they got the bike cops, and people are actually reportedly hospitalized, and there's images of people who have their face, you know, smashed in blood and stuff like that. And apparently even people who were not at part of the demonstration, one guy got taken down really aggressively, according to the social media video and reports. There's been a strong push in Toronto openly by all the pro-Israel groups to attack, and not just the pro-Israel groups, like the Trudeau's special envoy to combat anti-Semitism, Deborah Lyons. She's been calling for greater police repression, you know, repeatedly. She's a government finance. We're paying a couple million dollars a year for this position, and she's calling for a more authoritarian response from the police. Is there a paper trail in the sense that there was, like, you know, a letter sent to the – I actually think there are some. There have been letters from some of these pro-Israel groups to the police, I don't think there's any – nothing's hidden. A lot of these pro-Israel groups, you know, a Toronto city councillor, the most staunch Zionist Toronto city councillor, he applauded the police right after, you know, sending the horses in on the protest. So that it's not – there's nothing hidden about this kind of fascist, if you like, push from the pro-Israel forces. They are, you know, they are online openly saying – shut down the demonstrations. They, you know, some of the more extremist element are saying, you know, deport the, you know, it's the whole kind of racist that there, it's all foreigners that are protesting kind of idea, saying deport them and all this kind of stuff. So the Toronto police, I think what happened on Saturday was that they caved to what has been a multiple month lobbying campaign by those who really don't want, you know, who support the genocide in Gaza, but and don't want anybody to be challenging that policy.
A former high-up Canadian Forces figure, a superstar in the Canadian Forces, Rick Hillier, I've seen his feeds on Twitter these past weeks. What seems to me is an attempt to incite goons to come out and attack the demonstrations that have been going on weekly, as you describe, in many places, in Montreal, here in Victoria, and other places all over the world. And then he congratulated the cavalry coming out in Toronto on Saturday with an attaboy kind of a message as well. Now, he's not in government anymore. He's retired, but he's working for defense contractors and whatnot, of course, and sitting on boards and getting rich. But this, you know, what does this kind of pressure say to you, Eve?
Yeah, it's stunning. I mean, Rick Hillier, I just noticed that he actually blocked me on Twitter, which I don't even know why, because I don't know I interact with him. But the fact that the former head of the Canadian military is aggressively demanding repression of peaceful demonstrations is pretty outrageous. There is this establishing media, neoconservative, militarist kind of ethos that I think is pretty stunning to see it kind of rallied. I mean, I think it really is a kind of, like, if you want a proto-fascist ideology and thinking that has emerged in response to the fact that this is the most significant internationalist popular mobilization probably in Canadian history. This has been going on for, you know, mass demonstrations for 27 weekends in a row, you know, not just the weekend demonstrations, but all kinds of events, you know, Liberal Party fundraisers, big protests, people heckling politicians, disrupting fundraisers of the Liberal Party and others. It's just been a sustained mobilization that clearly angers and frustrates those who support this European colonial Jewish supremacist state in the Middle East. doing whatever it wants to Palestinians in Gaza. And should I say beyond that, you know, bombing Syria, blowing up Iranian diplomatic outposts. And they, these forces within Canada are, I guess, they're appalled, they're stunned, they're surprised by the popular mobilization, and they want it shut down. And so they're all their pretense towards, you know, democracy and the right to assemble and da 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 da. They you know, throw it out the window on behalf of their support for Israel. And I think more broadly, their support for a kind of Western militarist Middle East position.
Yeah, well, and last Saturday, the demos coincided with the annual Land Day, Palestine Land Day commemorations, as I said in the introduction. The grindmag.ca, David Gray Donald and Nur Dogan have a great piece, Violent Crackdown at Land Day March. That's up at The Grind. That's thegrindmag.ca. Check that out. Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Eve Angler. Eve's a Montreal-based political activist and the author of 13 books, mostly detailing the dark details of Canada's foreign policy elite, including the aforementioned book that I've got right beside me, in fact, Eve, Canada and Israel Building Apartheid. Eve's latest book is Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy, co-authored with Owen Schock. Eve, you're currently on a book tour promoting Canada's long fight against democracy. Before we go further, before we run out of time, are you going to be out here out west on the island in Vancouver, etc.?
I will be on during the week of June 8th to 15th. I should be at a number of spots on the island and in the Vancouver area.
Well, now, Eve, when you're talking about the establishment regarding Rick Hillier and his ilk, there's also an interesting piece up here at readthemaple.com by Davida Mastracchi. I interviewed him, Eve, and it was all about how people mispronounce his name. Mm-hmm. And I think I just hacked it. But he's got a piece up there now. No evidence for Erwin Coulter's Mandela claims, South Africans allege. Who is Erwin, firstly, and especially as regards Palestine?
Well, Erwin Kotler's been maybe the most important anti-Palestinian activist in Canada for the past 40 or 50 years. He has, you know, he was a former Liberal MP. He was in the Paul Martin's cabinet, and he's been a central figure in what he dubbed back in the early 1980s the new anti-Semitism, the fight against the new anti-Semitism, which he means very clearly criticism of Israel. And he's been, you know, an important force in pushing things like the IHRA anti-Palestinian definition of anti-Semitism and a whole bunch of predecessors to that. But he frames himself as this big human rights activist, and his human rights activism is so happens it's all countries that are targeted by the U.S. empire. He's really, you know, concerned about human rights in Iran and Russia and, you know, whatever. So he's clearly like that. Clearly aligns his human rights work with the interests of the U.S. empire. But and specifically, he's just a staunch promoter of Israel. Now, he uses one of the things he's used to sort of generate credibility in his work is this claim that he was sort of like important in freeing Nelson Mandela. And what Mastracchi has done very impressively, clearly very deep dive into the background here, Kotler's background, is to show that it's just a big scam. I mean, I knew it was a scam even before, you know, having the evidence put in front of me that it was a scam. But because anyone who knows how the politics of opposing Canada's support for apartheid South Africa knows that for years and years, it was something that it was a marginalized issue and the establishment was behind supporting South Africa. And so it wasn't a kind of issue that someone like Erwin Kotler, who has always, you know, wanted to align with power, would have possibly taken up. But what Mastracchi has done in this most recent piece And previous one, to show that there's just no evidence to it. All the South African people who were, you know, were actually Mandela's lawyers, or, you know, Mandela's biographies and all these different books that talk about this time, they never, Erwin Cotler's never mentioned. But what he's added in this latest piece to that story is that Cotler's claim that he was arrested by the South African officials when he was gave a speech in 1981 or 1982 in South Africa, that seems to just be a fabrication. It seems to be a total fabrication. It's not even clear that he got the year right. And in fact, it's not clear he was even in South Africa in 81, but only in 82. So this story, while it's sort of dealing with Erwin Cotler specifically, it's actually a really damning indictment of the dominant Canadian media, who have been the purveyors of this idea of Cotler as leading the fight to free Nelson Mandela. But also it's a indictment of the sort of Zionist movement in the country, who hold up Cotler as this sort of, you know, saintly figure who's this big moral crusader that, you know, backs Israel. So congrats to Mastriche for his important investigations in exposing Cotler and his lies.
Well, to be fair too, now Cotler answers the charges in that article by saying, well, his wife Ariella can confirm that everything he said is true and took place as he describes. He also says that the foreign minister and later prime minister Pik Botha, Cotler's quoted as saying, is regrettably no longer with us. This is like a dead men don't confirm stories or lies, for that matter. But he says, yes, he was ordered to be detained, because he also says he was arrested. It's not only that he went there and was a champion, but it's interesting because the relationship, Cotler's intimate relationship with Israel, a love affair, I mean, he's entirely devoted. Israel was entirely devoted to the apartheid era South Africa. So it seems to me to stretch credulity beyond reason to think that Cotler could serve two masters and both be an enemy of a great friend of Israel, who is his guiding light after all.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I mean, it's just... Even without knowing, you know, even without debunking the details and showing how there's no evidence of him ever being arrested in South Africa or detained, the bigger, looking at it from the broader picture, it doesn't make any sense, because he was, you know, a staunch Israel activist at the time when the apartheid regime in South Africa was working with the apartheid regime in Tel Aviv. So, but for the dominant media, why this is, I think, an important story beyond the individual is that the Canadian media has gone out of its way. I mean, Cotler has clearly embellished, fabricated, depending on exactly where you want to use his role in anything to do with Nelson Mandela. The Canadian media, which loves his targeting of China, Russia, Iran, and, you know, other official enemies of the U.S. empire, they have then embellished the embellishments or fabrications that Cotler has come up with. And they're to the point where they literally are saying that, like, Cotler freed Mandela. You know, like he was the, you know, the central person in freeing Nelson Mandela, which is just, like, you know, comical at every different level. But the reason the media does this is because Cotler is a figure that serves the interests of the U.S. empire, and the dominant media in Canada, of course, is very much aligned with that outlook.
Well, of course, Cotler says that, yeah, he was the lawyer. He was Mandela's lawyer at one point, but all the people that could verify that are sadly passed away as well. But if nothing else, I think I can say that Erwin Cotler has cemented his place as Canada's Alan Dershowitz, if grabbing the mantle that nobody else really, I think, would want to possess. So, Eve, we're fast running out of time, but We've talked before about the Disruption Network that you were a part of and founding in Canada. I'm not sure if the network is still operating, but clearly the disruptive tactic, this is challenging public figures in public places with embarrassing questions that the press never ask, is spreading. We see stuff on TikTok and other places all over the place of people doing this. None better, I suppose, than the founders of this Code Pink. But you do a great job of it yourself. And we saw our foreign minister, Melanie Genocide Jolie, flipping out. Now, was that you that was talking to her, or was that just somebody else and that you put up that?
It was not me. I put it up, and it was a father who was biking with his two children. Who on Laurier Street here in Montreal, he saw her as he's biking by, and he stopped. A longer version of the video, you can actually see the tire of his bike as he's going up on the sidewalk, which I cut from the version I shared. And he goes up to the minister and he asks why they won't lift the cap, you know, allow more Palestinians in Gaza to come to Canada. And he films it. He's part of a group called Families for Palestine, I think they called, or something better named than that, I think, but basically that, Parents for Palestine. And he films it, and what's Jolie basically hits his camera, and from what the visual you see, he's not like right in her face. I mean, she puts her hand out quite a ways. So she's clearly, she loses her cool. Then she, according to what he says, she puts her hand on him. You know, arguably, both of those instances could be viewed as assault.
They would be viewed as assault if the situation was reversed. If he had done that,
no doubt, undoubtedly, if things were reversed, they would be defined as assault. I personally am inclined towards kind of avoiding, you know, if no one's really hurt, let's try to avoid that kind of stuff too far. But but yes, no doubt that if it was other way around, he would have been accused of assault of the minister. And and then he goes on to she's sort of saying, I'm out for a walk. He asks it in French, and then the conversation he asks in English, and then the conversation goes into French. And he says, you know, you have a relaxing walk while you're supporting genocide. And then he says something to the effect of, it's my job to harass you or to while there's a genocide going on. So it's this kind of like interesting exchange that goes on. Now, clearly on social media, people love it. It's circulated widely. The media, the official media, doesn't like this stuff. They really don't like it. And I was trying to get my head around, they don't like it. They don't like it partly because, you know, they just uphold power. I think they also don't like it because it actually is sort of like, it exposes that people asking questions that they'll never, you know, they don't ask. And also, I think they don't like it because it becomes actually just a sort of another form of media. And so it's almost like a, you know, a little bit of a competitor in some sense. But they've gone into this whole business of, this is like, they flipped it around. Rather than the minister may have assaulted somebody, they flipped it around that this is like a sign of how the politicians need to be better protected and the danger. Now, again, he had his two kids with him. He was on his bike. Guy lives in the neighborhood, presumably. There was the one report says the guy that you see a man enter the frame at the end of it, who apparently is Jolie's RCMP. It's actually an RCMP agent who presumably sees a guy on his bike with two children and knows, of course, that he's not a threat to the foreign minister. I mean, he may be annoying for the foreign minister. He may be disrespectful to the foreign minister, but he's like clearly not a threat in the sense of to her, you know, physical harm or security, which is what the RCMP is supposed to be there for. They're not supposed to be there, despite what the politicians try to use them for, to protect the politicians politically. They're supposed to be there to protect them physically. And he just basically kind of walks into the frame at the end of it. And, you know, but the media has gone totally freaked out here in Montreal, particularly about how the danger to the ministers and this and that. And to me, it's exactly what we want to be doing. We want these politicians. I mean, there's many reasons why we want to be doing this. We want to be doing this because this is a way, from the standpoint of social media, of putting and, you know, it was picked up by CTV and CB24 and Journal de Montréal and stuff like that, picked up the actual issues were picked up. So this is a way to get the issues out there. But also, you know, if politicians, if individuals are going to do this, they need to know.